Everyone, welcome to this episode of the Optimism Show. Today we have Wasabi, who is actually the founder of Coconut Network, which is a DAO that has the most unique use case I've ever seen. And I'm really excited for the conversations we're going to have today. Wasabi, welcome. It's a pleasure having you here today.
Yo, thank you, Chris. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be with you today. Yeah, I cannot wait until to go deep into the world of coconuts.
Yeah, into the world of coconuts and crypto. It's a very, very interesting intersection, I have to say. But before we get into the details, like, let's just start high level. Like, just briefly, what is Coconut Network and what are you really building and aiming for here?
Coconut Network is, let's say, is a concept around a real problem, a global problem. You know, because what we're trying to achieve here is empower communities, is empower underserved communities, but also any kind of community to deploy and build natural assets. And by natural assets, I mean the real world assets that are backed by nature, are backed by nature processes, and in a way doesn't rely on chemicals or outside inputs that might harm the environment. Because, you know, the problem that we're trying to solve on a very high level is the lack of funding for real life projects. You know, out there are many communities, there are many people doing the work, and they don't have access to, let's say, a wealth of funding to keep building. And you can say that that's because of a few basic problems. Number one is the lack of trust, the lack of high fidelity data. You know, data is the new oil. So not every community out there is able to design processes that make data a pillar of the process. So yeah, that's what we're trying to build, is this network of people that is stewarding assets in the real world and are able to design process that any stakeholder, local or global, can come together and work alongside them to build, develop these assets and fund them in a more fair way, a more, you know, in a decentralized way. Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's an excellent point. And one thing that I think is really important that you mentioned last time is also the fact that when someone comes in as an investor in Coconut Network, they practically, like, that's how you figured it out, is they invest in like local ventures and local farmers. And it practically goes to the, like, it cuts a lot of middlemen, if we see it from that perspective, which of course might not be liked by a lot of people, but it's a very interesting use case of how blockchain can change certain industries. Like, how practically did you even come up with this idea to tap into a space that seems so far off from the common crypto space, and without being super technical about it, but by using what is already built out?
Back in 2020, someone came to my house to visit, and they were talking about how hard it was to raise funding to build a coconut farm. So it was the NFT bull market, and I said, why don't you use, you know, Web3? You can launch an NFT. Because I saw all of these collections being sold out in minutes. So I was like, why don't you use the tech? And that's how the idea of Coconut Network began. I already had the domain. So this person said that, hey, I don't know anything about blockchain, so do you want to be part of the team? So I had the domain Coconut Network for something else. I wanted to build like a coconut-based marketplace for people building products out of coconuts. So I was like, okay, let me research a little bit about the idea, and let me see how we can bring the coconuts concept to blockchain and create like something that has synergies. One of the strongest points, let's say, is the life of a coconut tree. you know, coconut tree can last up to 20 years in peak condition producing coconut. So in a way, the tree itself is able to produce an output that is not only coconuts, is the stability that brings to any ecosystem. Because if you know that you have this asset that is going to be there for 20 years producing another asset that it is actually liquid, because if you think about it, the tree itself is bound to earth, but the output of the tree is the one that is bringing that liquidity, and you have that liquidity coming into the system for 20 years, you can actually plan for long term from whatever perspective that you might want. So basically that's how the concept of using coconut trees as the metric for voting tokens in a DAO was born. Like, hey, we can pair the voting tokens in the DAO, and every time we deploy a new farm, we meet that amount of trees about to be planted, and that those are the assets that people can buy and own. So you know that every voting chair or every voting token in the DAO is backed by one coconut tree in the land, and that coconut tree is going to be there for 20 years at least, producing value. So that's basically how the idea of pairing coconut trees and DAO shares was born. Because of that, people look at trees, we look at the stability from the trees. So yeah, that's why I tweet that coconut trees are bear market proof by design, because
yeah,
it doesn't matter what happens in the crypto market, the trees are going to be there growing and producing coconuts year after year.
There's also even a shortage right now when it comes in the coconut industry. It's only going to get stronger. Now, on that point, I'm really curious, because there's always recently a bit more, there's these talks about having real world assets backing crypto, vice versa, some combinations of that. I'd love to hear like your perspectives on that, and where do you see the actual, just for a start, the coconut network progressing in the coming months and years, and what are the challenges that you expect to see?
You know, I would say that so going with the first question, the problem that I see in most of the offerings when it comes to real world assets, but back in crypto and vice versa, is that they are relying in assets that, yeah, have like a low risk, let's say, a low barrier of entry, but it's not that they're creating change by default. For example, most products, they rely on treasury bills, or they rely on the real estate market on a specific location, let's say. So yeah, that works because it's low risk. Any traditional organization is going to provide you with resources, funding, and so on. But the main difference between coconut and those offerings is that we are building on a global scale, and we are building with the decentralization of ownership and stewardship of the assets. You know, so for example, stable coins that are backed by treasury bills, they are one signature away of, you know, getting the business seized, or having like an executive order to, hey, rules are about to change. So for example, right now in the States, they're working really hard to lower the government spending. And the consequence of that effort is that the interest rates that stable coins rely on to make money are going to be lower, because lower the debt, lower the interest rate on treasury bills and bonds and so on. So the beauty of what we're building is that we are market agnostic, and industry agnostic. You know, so for example, what happens in the States with a policy is not going to affect the market of coconuts, or is not going to affect assets that are, let's say, in South America and so on, because at the end of the day, our assets are backed by nature, but they are producing something that is critical for humans, and we are producing food. You know, so food supply is more resilient than any other kind of asset that you might think of, because as a human, you depend on farmers at least 2 times per day, because you need to eat every day. So the next difference is that we are decentralizing ownership, and we are bringing change to how the supply, the actual economic engine works. We are not like putting a wrapper on top of the existing system. We are like going into a little bit more riskier place by engaging with local community, and not only engaging with them, is more empowering those communities to be able to build assets without even relying on us. We are removing that centralization from the equation, because what we're producing is open source knowledge and open processes that they can take the framework, and it's up to them if they want to join the network or not. But we are giving them the tools to build these new, not new, because humans been growing food for thousands of years, but it's new from the sense that now they can have like a modular approach to funding, governance, and how to scale throughout the supply chain. So that's the main difference. But
it also kind of, from what I understand, it kind of shifts the dynamic, in the sense of, like, instead of just by using blockchain and the technology, instead of the power being in like big corporations, you actually give power more to the people that are actively involved in the growing, in the managing of the farms. So in fact, they are the ones that know what to do best.
Yeah, you know, if you think about it, power back to the people is the whole ethos of Web3 and blockchain. It is, hey, the power is going back to the community. That's why when you look at the staking of any blockchain, it's solo stakers, the majority. Same happens with Bitcoin. It's solo miners that have most of the control, in a way. So, and people are the ones who choose presidents. They choose, you know, who's running any country is, what, well, most of the countries, it's the people. So by shifting the formula a little bit from, hey, we ain't building for corporations and what we're building for people, you are actually becoming more resilient and building like a more anti-capture framework by design, because you approaching people, and it is people that own most of the land around the world. It's people that do the job. Like the first line of production, the first line of value in the food supply, in the world food supply, is the people. The problem is that you have corporations buying from middlemen. So the middlemen, they engage with the local community, and then they sell to a specific corporation. But if we shift the formula and we give not only priority, it's more like we design a more fair distribution of value, then we are able to create high quality outputs. When you have the community taking care of planting, of packaging the food, of distribution as much as you can, you are making sure that that quality is being the core pillar, and you have a better outcome, because these people growing food for people.
Yeah, and an interesting, like, I'm going to take a bit of a tangent here and go a bit more on the DAO side of things. Last time when we chatted, like you mentioned, if I'm not sure, they use Moloch DAO. But it was really interesting to see something like this being built, which from what I understand is like, you none of you are really technical founders. You use the tools that are already out there to build something that serves an industry and practically bridges blockchain and in this case the food industry. So I'm really curious, like when it comes to as a non-technical founder and creator, what are the main challenges that you encountered along the way to actually make this project a success and to get to the point where you are right now and eventually to get to the next one?
In fact, my background, you know, is in IT. My co-founder also, his background is in IT. But okay, having that non-technical approach is intentional. Because, you know, what we try to do here is empower communities. So we cannot empower communities like in the front line if the approach is technical from the get-go. Like, that's, you know, that's a problem. Because I was reading a blog post a few days ago that sometimes the technical approach is leading the charge, but communities don't follow. Because sometimes you're building like the most shiny unicorn, but it is then really hard to enforce that in the ground level of in the ground sense of things. So yeah, we wanted to build something that it doesn't matter your technical background, it doesn't matter if you have a Solidity developer in the team, you still can take this process and use no code DAO tooling and actually make that happen. Deploy the assets and make the most out of the processes. That's why we're building the framework in a very modular approach. Like, hey, if you want to take the framework and be very technical about it, you can do it. You can take that approach and do it. But if you want to just take, let's say, the planting, the operational side of the framework related to the on-the-ground work, then yay, you also can do it. Because sometimes we as builders, as founders, we build solutions that are too rigid. We are not trying to build a company here. We are not trying to build like another business. What we're trying to build is a solution that empower communities. You know, so that's the main North Star of Coconut is empower communities, because based on our research, that's where the problem relies right now. And that's the problem that we want to address. And that's a global problem, is that there is not like a standard, there is not like a common ground for local communities and external stakeholders to come together and be like, hey, this is like, we agree to this process and we are going to follow this process because the process is going to allow me as a liquidity provider to provide liquidity and get a profit out of that liquidity provision that I'm doing. And on the other side of the coin, there is the local community that wants to get that liquidity to be able to build these projects and still optimize for the common for the common good of the community. Is that, hey, we get to keep the land, we get to work without thinking about a loan shark is going to come by end of month, and we need to sell our products below market price because we need to pay this guy, and so on. So that's the central idea. So going to the second question of what is the challenges that we have encountered, you know, we've been blessed from that side, because pretty much since we came to Web3 with this idea of coconuts of real world assets backed by nature, we have gotten a bunch of support from the community. A bunch of people has approached me and say, hey, you can count on us to build whatever smart contract you want. You can come to us to build whatever custom solution. For example, the people from DAO House, they have been very supportive of Coconut since day one because they have been there just, hey, whatever you need, whatever custom build, whatever it might be, just talk to us and we're going to help. Because they are very bullish into this idea of community assets that are not reliant in centralized actors. You know, so I kind of say that we have faced like problems or like blockers from the Web3 side. I can say that we have focused on just polishing the methodology and polishing what is actually that we want to do when it comes to respecting and serving the needs and wants of every stakeholder across the world. Because that's why having that modular approach is like key for us, because not every community has the same needs and not every stakeholder have the same wants. Like, you have stakeholders that they want to optimize for profit, but you also have stakeholders that they want to optimize for impact. Or you have communities that they might need to implement decentralized governance, but you have community that what they need actually is liquidity because they already have like a decentralized governance. And just to put that in perspective, let's talk about communities in the Amazon. They have the most decentralized and community-centric governance system already in place because of how those communities coordinate. Basically, they've been coordinating for thousands of years, and most of them haven't even joined this side of the humanity in a way. They still are very, you know, native when it comes to their approach, and they respect those boundaries. So when you are going to work with a community in the Amazon, they don't need that DAO governance because they have a DAO already. It just works in a different way. What they need probably is liquidity, or what they need probably is a common standard for data and for impact report. So they can use those framework and those processes to build other sources of revenue besides of agriculture. So for example, when you trying to deal with a community, let's say in the Dominican Republic, probably that community do need that DAO governance, probably they need the liquidity side of the framework, and probably they need the full spectrum of the coconut framework that we're building, because that's the local needs that they have. And, you know, that's why we focus first on understanding all of the needs and all of the variables that has to do, are related to real life projects. And more than real life projects, on projects, the actual execution on the ground of agricultural projects. That's why you can call the first two years of Coconut as a research and development phase. So we gather all of the facts in the ground. We understand the needs of those local communities, because the needs of the global stakeholders, we know them, is more easily to find out what are the wants. Because a stakeholder that is providing liquidity, they have two wants mainly. One is the return on investment, and the number two is the return on impact. It's simple. Those are the two variables that you are going to interact with when you are engaging a liquidity provider. Either it is a DAO or it is a family office, or it is a grants program. A grants program, they want return on impact. Hey, we're funding you. We want to see what is the impact that you are going to produce. But when you are dealing with a DAO, the DAO wants to optimize for the return on investment so the DAO can keep growing. The members get to see some revenue out of the operations. But also, let's say that the DAO is a DAO that was formed in a environmental community. So they want to optimize for impact more than they want to optimize for profit. You know, so all of those variables is what we set out to understand first, so then we can build the tech around those needs and wants, and not vice versa. Because sometimes, you know, sometimes you build a solution first without understanding the real problem, and then you need to spend a few millions of dollars just trying to onboard people to what you build. Yeah, we have a shiny unicorn product, but now we don't have users. Now we don't have people embracing that product. But if you do it like vice versa, and you do the research and development first and then build the product around those needs, then you already have like a target audience that actually wants to use your solution.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, actually. And thinking about not only just in crypto, but even in almost all the industries. And we recently had a podcast interview around this, like practically having that human-centric design first, like human identity, rather than, okay, I'm just going to build the shiniest thing out there, launch a coin, and that's it.
It's a problem because you
it depends what you're building for. It depends what you're building for in the end.
Attention economy is tricky. You know, so when your whole value proposal relies on attention, then it's tricky waters because attention can be bought super easy, like mainly with incentives, mainly with money, you can buy attention. So when your product central pillar is based on attention, then in a way, humans become the weakest link in that change of value because you rely on humans being glued to a device. You rely on humans. Besides being glued to a device, you rely on those humans to provide that attention that your product needs in order to thrive. So that's why you have to launch a grants program. You have to launch a bunch of incentives so you can capture that attention because, yeah, you have a great product, but your product is not solving like an existential problem in the world, you know? So that's the biggest advantage that Coconut has, is that we actually solving real problems, and those problems are derived from human needs. So it's pretty tough to say, oh yeah, we don't want a food. You cannot say that as a human because you rely on food to survive. It's a need that you have, you know.
It's just looking at the entire equation at the entire space, like from a bit different lenses. We're actually looking at it without the lenses, just looking at it as it is, from what I understand from this.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much, yeah. We want to stay grounded, and that's why, you know, we haven't talked about launching a token. We haven't talked about none of that stuff. Because at the end of the day, launching a token is going public. That's the translation. You went public. So if you don't have like all your docs in order, you're going to fail if you do it like in the wrong timing. It is something that I'm very proud of. We don't have, for example, talking about DAOs, in our DAO thesis, the core team doesn't have any power in the DAO. Because, like, I can give you like a bunch of why, but the main why is because we want to empower the community to have the decision power. We want to empower the community to have the agency to solve problems. And we want to incentivize you by, hey, we don't have voting power because your input is very valuable to us. And we want you to be the one steering the ship. And that's how you leverage wisdom of crowds. You know, wisdom of crowds is the most influential concept that we use to make that decision in the DAO thesis of, hey, because how do you solve a problem in the future that you don't know? Well, the problem is going to be when the problem is going to arrive is by using wisdom of crowds. And wisdom of crowds only works if community have the agency, if the community is empowered, if the community have the access to the data to make an informed decision. So all of those pillars like data collection, data fidelity, empowering the community is how we build a more resilient ecosystem over time. It is how we solve a problem that, let's say, 20 years from now, the problem comes, the community has all of the tools to solve that problem, and they don't need to even talk to the core team. I don't even need to be in this world for they to solve the problem, because I have no power, you know. I'm just a messenger. We're building the network and the framework in a way that you don't even need to, the DAO doesn't even need to ask for permission from the core team to deploy a new farm. Let's say that the DAO wants to deploy a farm in Chile, in Costa Rica, in Europe. They can take the framework and say, okay, based on the needs of this community where the farm is going to be deployed, these are the components that we need to use from the framework to make that happen. And they don't need to ask me, they don't need to even reach out. They can just say, hey, we want you to be just a consultant or an advisor in this new farm. And this is the incentive package that we want to offer you or your team to go there and take care of the development of that new farm. That's the kind of flexibility and that's the kind of power we are giving to the DAO by default. And you don't have that out there. Like, the DAO can just fork itself and create many new DAOs. And they don't need, because the Coconut framework is open source. So if they want to just use the framework and not even join the network, they can do it. It's okay, because that's what we want. We want to empower communities to take action and, hey, realize that the people has the power to make that change without having asked for permission or without having to rely on a central authority. That's the biggest unlock that we want to foster, is that, hey, take the framework and go to a community in Africa and deploy a new farm. And if you want that farm to be part of the network, then yeah, you do, because we don't even tax farms to join the network. It's zero tax, but that's up to the DAO then later to say, okay, we are going to launch, let's say that in the future, the DAO wants to launch a liquid token. And my suggestion is going to be, hey, do like an index-like token. So the sum of all of the farms in the network are providing value to this token, and that token is providing value to the whole network. But it's going to be something that is up to the DAO to do. And even so, let's say that the proposal comes from the core team, it's going to be up to the governance of each farm to join or not, opting into that token or not, because by default, you can think about all farms like a Docker container. Well, you can have dozens of Docker containers running on a virtual server. but they are isolated from each other. So you can think about that. You can think about coconut network in that same concept. Every farm in the network is isolated from the next one. So in the network, we can have 10 farms that are funded by coconut DAO that right now is deployed in Gnosis Chain. But what if a new community comes and they deploy a new instance of the DAO on Ethereum? Or not Ethereum, let's say another ecosystem, Cosmos or Solana. Then they're going to deploy new farms, and it's up to them to, number one, join the network, and it is up to them if they want to play nice with the rest of the ecosystem because they are isolated. So the system becomes more resilient over time, but it is not our system. It is the community system. So it is up to those communities to say, hey, we want to actually grow together and we want to be part of the wider, or we want to form this federation of farms. And it is up to them if they want to join the coconut network or not, because they can have, I don't know, strawberry network, or they can have all sorts of flavors like Linux. Like you can take the kernel, build a new flavor of the same concept. And that's what we want. And that's how you solve a systematic problem, is by empowering instead of trying to control the community. We want to empower them to do it. If tomorrow we have thousands of farms that are community owned, it doesn't matter if they are plugged into our network or not. It doesn't matter if we as core team have influence over those farms or not, because what we want is to solve the systematic problem of funding reaching those communities. Because right now there is no like a standard process that anyone can follow and that every stakeholder can agree to the process, so we can unlock value and we can say, okay, you see how you have these secure by Ethereum labels, or this label now, the new one is built on Ethereum.
Yeah.
When something is built on Ethereum, you know that there is a group of processes and rules that all of those projects or all of those builds are following. So we want to mimic that concept of, hey, we are secure by the coconut framework, or we are built on top of the coconut framework, or we take the coconut framework and we build a solution that is tailored to our local needs, or like that's, you know, that's a concept. But at the end of the day, when you go to the root, you know how to look for the data, you know how to explore the data, how to interact with the data, because that's what the EVM ecosystem brings to all of these layer tools and all of these apps and apps, is that they have like a common process on how they create data, how they post data in the chain, and how that data is verified by any third party or any actor across the whole supply chain. It doesn't matter in Ethereum. It doesn't matter in which step of the economic flywheel you are. You are able to verify what's going on in the rest of the ecosystem, and pretty much how you can look at farms in coconut.
Yeah, those are some, actually a lot of DAOs and in general companies can definitely learn quite a lot from the structure you're implementing it here, because just as you said previously, it's like it's the core of decentralization, but it seems like a lot have forgotten about the aspects of actually just giving up control to the community, but doing it in a way that empowers the community to make the right decisions. Not just, okay, here's all the control, figure it out. But you're doing it in a way where you're also providing the system and the structure for people to come in and use it effectively to reach some kind of a goal.
Yeah, the problem with power is that it's really hard to let go. That's a human. It's humanity right there. Like, power is really hard to let go. So if you want to let go of the power, you need to do it before you have it, before that power is consolidated. Because that's why, and that's one of the reasons I propose, hey, we don't actually need voting power in the DAO. Because if we do, we are centralizing power and we are capping how much the idea can grow out there. Because if you think about it, having no voting power in the DAO means that the DAO can make decisions on its own, but also we and you and anyone else can fork the DAO, and we can create another version and another version that is optimizing for something different. Probably we want to optimize for, let's say that tomorrow the Coconut DAO, they want to start owning land instead of just partnering with local communities. So, but let's say that some DAO members, they don't like the idea. They can rage quit the DAO because we have rage quit enabled in the design of the DAO. We are not waiting for a problem to come or a drama to come to the DAO to say, oh, we need rage quit. No. Rage quit is part of the design because if you don't agree with whatever is happening, you can just rage quit the DAO, but you can fork the DAO and you can create a new one and you can say, okay, this new version of Coconut DAO is going to optimize to besides of partnering with communities, but also we want to own the land where we are deploying these assets. And you have the framework to leverage that is open source, and you have all of these network effects to build on top of them. Because when you go out there and you say, oh, we're forking Coconut DAO, anyone else that is going to join your version of the DAO is going to be able to look at the previous traction and say, okay, your proposal is aligned with all of the what made the last version of the DAO successful, let's say. So it's easier for you to bring people on board because they know that you're following on a proven framework. You're following up on a proven processes. You are just introducing a new idea, or you're just introducing a new way of coordinating. Or let's say that the version of the DAO that I propose, it doesn't comply with the local regulations in your country. And let's say that you want to fork the DAO because you want to modify some elements to make that DAO compliant with local regulations. That's where the real value and the real upside of what we're building relies on, is that you can always create a new version and you can always leverage the past traction and the past processes and build something better that serves the needs of your local community.
Yeah. It's really taking a structured step-by-step way to actually achieve something that truly creates a long-term effect.
No.
And I definitely can see that there's a lot that organizations, especially Web3 organizations, can learn a lot from how you structure things and back them up. So thank you one more time.